Hi, thank you very much for taking my question. After the first meeting of the emergency committee, Dr. Tedros, you revealed that although they didn't vote, that the committee felt 11 members of the committee felt monkeypox was did not meet the criteria to be a fake, and three thought it did. Can you tell us how the committee broke down this time, please?
Thank you, Ellen, for this question. Dr. Tedros, please.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I think during the first meeting, I announced then that they don't normally vote. It's not a formal voting. It's what they call in French, tour de table. So they just check what the position of the majority is, to just sense where the discussion is going. So the 11 in favor, I mean, the 11 who were against declaring FIG and three who were in favor, you can't call it a voting, but just some checking that can show the relative positions of people. Because they provide recommendations to me. If they go to voting, it means it's a decision, but they don't, the committee doesn't decide. At the end of the day, they give advice, they give recommendation, and it's my responsibility whether to accept it or not. That's why we don't call it a voting. I just want to make that clear. So previously it was 11-3, and this time it's 9-6. Nine against and six in favor. And nine and six is very, very close. But at the same time, there was no consensus. The committee couldn't reach a consensus on which way to go, although those who are against FIC are have a simple majority, which is very, very close. So that's what happened. Of course, as I said earlier, since there the role of the committee is to advise, I then had to act as a tiebreaker. I consider this as a clause and no consensus by them. So my colleagues and myself discussed about this issue, and we believed that it's time to declare FIC or public health emergency of international concern, considering their advice and considering how it spread even since the last meetings we had. I think at that time they were in 37 countries. Now it's more than, now it's around 75 countries. And counting, by the way, by the day we see more countries being affected. And we expect that this will continue to be the case. And we considered other factors, and we decided to have a declaration of the public health emergency of international concern. And we believe this will mobilize the world to act together. It needs coordination. And it needs not only coordination, but solidarity, especially as previously asked, the use of vaccines and treatments and able to control the monkeypox, outbreak or the spread that we see in globally.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tedros. With this, we go to the next question, and we go to Simon Atiba from Today News Africa. Simon, please unmute yourself.
Thank you for taking my question. This is Simon Atiba with Today News Africa in Washington. Dr. Tedros, you said again that no one should stigmatize anyone. I'm just wondering, do we know why men who have sex with men are affected the most? And can you briefly explain again what it takes to declare an outbreak a public health emergency of international concern? And if you can talk a little bit about how this disease is affecting Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Simon. I thought there were quite a lot of questions, and given the number of people, I think we'll restrict it a bit, but we'll start with Dr. Lewis, please.
Sure, thanks very much. I think there were three questions there, so I'll start with the first and the third. So why men who have sex with men? Well, I'm sure it's a question we've all been asking ourselves for quite some time now, many weeks. And it has always been known, monkeypox has been around, as you say, in Africa. It was first demonstrated there in a child in 1970. The first virus was actually found in a research colony of monkeys in Denmark in 1958. So we were 12 years between the time that the virus was discovered and it was first discovered in a small child, a young infant, around the time of smallpox eradication, just prior to that. And so this virus has been there for a long time. It's been in human populations for a long time. And you ask a very valid question as to what's been happening since then. But let's come first to the question that the virus has always been known as a zoonotic disease, right? So it's a virus that sits or circulates in various animal populations and then can be transmitted to humans in the course of various activities in the natural setting, such as hunting in the forest, preparing meat and things like that, where a contaminated animal can also then infect a person. However, there has always been information that there is some human-to-human transmission, which has historically always occurred in primarily in the family setting at the time when most people were vaccinated against smallpox. And so outbreaks would remain fairly small, relatively contained, transmitting in the household amongst family members, for example. That would be a typical outbreak. Over the course of time, over the course of many years, the chains of transmission of monkeypox have become slightly longer, possibly six, maybe possibly nine sequential chains of transmission, which shows that the virus, the disease was manifesting more human-to-human transmission. What is not really known yet, and this is an important feature, is whether that was features that were changes in the virus, or whether it was because as more and more people were born post-smallpox eradication, there were fewer and fewer people who are actually collectively immune to orthopox viruses because both these viruses are from the same family. And then we had, there's a different clade of virus in West Africa compared to Central Africa. And this different clade of virus has always presented less severe illness. And therefore, when an illness is less severe, that's good news, but it's also can present more challenges for containment because if people are not so sick, then they more easily go out, more easily be in contact with other people. So again, over the course of time, one country in particular in West Africa experienced an outbreak, significant outbreak of monkeypox for the first time in 40 years. And that outbreak was managed by the country, but in fact, the cases never really completely went to zero. And then from that country, other people began to become, travelers began to become infected. So what we now think has happened, thanks for the time for the long introduction, but what we now think has happened is that this virus clearly was already moving in with people, with travelers, in families, and some spillover events have continued from animal populations. And the virus has been able to continue moving. So the hypothesis is, and this remains to be confirmed, is that as the virus moved into even a post-COVID world where some people were able to travel again, so more travel, more viruses on the move, it established itself in a group that have frequent social gatherings, are together often, and also have frequent events involving intimate physical contact and sexual contact, and sometimes sexual contact with multiple partners over a period of a few days or a few weeks. This is a situation where there is obviously more skin-to-skin, person-to-person contact, close contact situations, settings where there may be many people involved in certain activities. So the mode of transmission initially was not thought to have changed. It's still skin-to-skin contact. However, we're also now beginning to see suggestions that there is also spread from sexual activity in the sense that sexual activity involves, again, very close intimate contact, including penetrative contact. And that may actually, we don't yet know, there's a lot we don't yet know about what's happening now. But certainly there are possibilities that need to be explored, that there are new modes of transmission through sexual activity, which have not clearly been described before. So we have a situation where the virus currently remains, as we said earlier, contained primarily in one population group. It is a population group that are very proactive in health-seeking behavior. And so coming forward and looking for access to care, for diagnosis, and to support each other. And however, it's still a group that where activities can bring people together. For example, on the margins of pride celebrations, for example, or in places where there are sex on premises activities, things like that, that really can put people at risk through immediate possible exposure to the virus. So this is what we think is happening now, that it's as we said, both a challenge and good news, that the outbreak remains primarily contained within one population group, who are actually already working really very hard to support each other to stop this outbreak.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lewis. And I believe for the second part of the question, this was laid out pretty well in the opening remarks in the statement by the Director General. So Simon, I'll refer you to this. I think we have time for one more question, and that goes to Donato Mancini from the FT. Donato, please unmute yourself.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my question and for organizing this on a Saturday. Very simply, is it too late in your assessment to control the spread of monkeypox where it is not endemic? So do you expect it will become endemic in more countries as the outbreak progresses? Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll have Dr. Lewis start again.
Thank you. Well, we don't have a crystal ball, so we don't know for sure if we're going to be able to support countries enough and communities enough to stop this outbreak. We think it is still possible, precisely because it remains primarily in one group, who, as I said, are very active in health-seeking behavior and supporting each other in reducing risk. We'd like to encourage that group to continue to undertake the actions both individually and collectively to reduce their own personal risk. It's only by understanding your risk, understanding modes of transmission, that you can assess your own risk, reduce your own risk, protect yourself, and protect others. So we are very much appealing to communities and community leaders who have many years of experience, for example, in managing HIV/AIDS or sexually transmitted infections, to work with more mainstream, if you will, public health officials and public health agencies at the community level, at the local level, as well as civil society organizations. If we all pull together with one single objective, which is to stop this outbreak, and that is really the goal that everyone sets for themselves, then each individual can manage their own risk and each community can support each other to reduce their risk, and health agencies can support that work, and governments can support that work through ensuring human rights and access to services as much as is possible, and access to diagnostics as much as is possible, training of health workers, training of clinicians at the front line, in all sorts of health services where people may present with what can be a surprisingly diverse presentation of this particular disease. It can present as a fever, it can present as rash, it can present as it looks like a sexually transmitted infection. It can also look like chickenpox, for example. And so there are classic features of monkeypox. We've described them many times. There are also some features in this outbreak which make it slightly harder to identify those cases. And there may be new modes of transmission which are as yet not fully described. So we are calling on all individuals and communities to work together to stop this outbreak. And we're calling on all scientists and public health authorities as well to work on identifying and learning more about the disease, doing research around the clinical manifestations of the illness, the way it plays out, also the best treatments, which may or may not include antivirals. There are many ways to protect vision, to protect the skin, to prevent complications and long-term sequelae of this disease. So there is a lot of work to be done, but foremost and primarily, understanding what causes risk, what are the situations in which someone might be exposed, and reducing those situations that put people at risk so they can protect themselves. This is how we will get to the end of this outbreak.
Thank you very much. And Dr. McGrain, please.
And just on the specifics of risks, there are two specific risks here. One is we don't wish to see this version of the disease establish itself along with other diseases that have become established, infections that are transmitted sexually, and it becomes an established disease, endemic disease. And that's regardless of sexual preference or gender. Because in that situation, we all know how difficult it has been historically to deal with the diseases like this because of the issue of stigma, the issues around protection of identity. There's so many issues that it's a complex public health issue. You only have to speak to physicians and public health people who work in that to realize how difficult it can be, not from a purely scientific point of view, but from a societal and a cultural point of view, to address the issues there. The second risk is obviously the extension of that disease out into a broader community and with transmission at a community level. We've seen that previously with orthopox viruses like smallpox that have done that historically over centuries and caused great pain and suffering. That is not what monkeypox does normally. But we need to be cautious, and as Rosamund said, we don't have a crystal ball. Viruses do evolve. It's not something people should be worried about, but it's something scientists should be concerned about and following, and we will continue to follow that. So from that specific point of view, and that's why we say, again, it is so important that we'd use the opportunity to control the disease where it's at now, but to do that with the community affected, to do that in partnership with the community, and that their leadership and that the support they receive from governments in particular and from other members of society is now absolutely crucial. It's absolutely essential that we don't push this disease away, push this disease under the table, and then try to forget about it as if it doesn't exist. Because if we don't assist the affected community, there is always the chance that this will become a broader or more generalized issue. So this is, DG has spoken about it before. If nothing else, this is about enlightened self-interest. This is about showing solidarity for the benefit of the people that we're in partnership with, but ultimately to the benefit of the whole of our society.
Thank you so much. And we have a few more words from Dr. Lewis.
Thank you. I'll just come in with a couple more thoughts on that particular point about the future. And that is that this, as mentioned earlier, this disease has been known for many years now. There has been research. There was extensive research in parts of Central and West Africa in the 1980s, around the time of smallpox eradication. That research did start to tail off when it was thought that this may not represent, at that time, a major public health risk. And at that time, that was a reasonable conclusion. Now, 40 years later, we are seeing a different pattern, but it's also important to appreciate that the countries that have been living with this virus all this time are still living with this virus. They still have zoonotic transmission. They still have exposure in the natural setting. They still have children who are at risk. They still have adolescents who are going into the forest and maybe hunting with family and community members who may be at risk from a virus that is circulating amongst animals. So that's one thing. And the second thing is that as this virus spreads in those countries, in those communities, it is showing a different pattern of transmission. It has been showing a different pattern of transmission over the last few years. In that situation, 20 to 30% are women and girls, and only two-thirds to three-quarters of the cases are among men and boys. And so I also say women and girls and boys advisedly, because there are children involved as well in those countries, and some of the deaths that have been occurring from monkeypox in those countries have been occurring most commonly either among children or among people who are immune compromised, including those who may not have adequate access to HIV therapy, for example, or who are immune compromised for other reasons because they're taking chemotherapeutic agents, other treatments that may suppress their immune system or have other conditions that may suppress their immune system. So the risk for some countries is much more multifaceted and more people are at risk because of the epidemiology and demographics in those specific situations, which has not changed, and they will certainly be complicated by the multi-country outbreak because, of course, they will also be affected by the multi-country outbreak. So in addition to what they were already dealing with, which is zoonotic transmission and extension of person-to-person or human-to-human transmission, now they are also having to deal with cases related to travel from other countries and travel amongst within the region. And so they're going to have a very complex picture and a much greater challenge to really identify what the sources of exposure are, what the modes of transmission are, and therefore an even greater challenge, of course, also in accessing diagnostics, vaccines, and therapeutics. And this is the time to not forget about communities in those countries. This is time to support those countries and to call on all activists as well as community leaders and governments to do what's necessary to support those countries as well while we manage the global outbreak at the same time.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lewis. And all with this, we're coming to the close of today's extraordinary press briefing on the update on the report of the second meeting of the IHR Emergency Committee regarding the multi-country outbreak of monkeypox. I thank you all very, very much for joining us this afternoon, evening, morning, whatever it is for you to hear the latest on this. Again, thank you for your patience, and good to have you with us. I want to thank the colleagues here too. A word on what's to follow now. We will be sending our usual after press briefing remarks with the audio files and again Dr. Todios's remarks, but also with the links to the emergency committee report. This is already online, so you can find it already online. You don't have to wait for our send out, and also Dr. Tedros' remarks are already online, and the links are out there. The full transcript of this briefing will most likely be posted by Monday only. We'll see about, we'll get it done as soon as possible. Any follow-up questions, of course, please join us. And otherwise, thank you again, and over to Dr. Tedros for closing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Christian. It was one of the questions I just would like to address that before we close, especially on stigma and discrimination. Stigma and discrimination, first of all, it's a violation of human rights. And second, it can undermine our response and our efforts to stop the transmission and bring this outbreak under control. So because of these two reasons, I think we ask government, society, to fight stigma and discrimination. And we seek your strong commitment to uphold human dignity, human rights, so that we can control this outbreak. With monkeypox, the good news is we have the tools. And if we uphold solidarity, and as I said, human rights and dignity, it can be controlled. We can bring it under control, the outbreak of monkeypox. So with that, I would like to thank the press who have joined us today. And I join Christian in apologizing for the delay. We were supposed to start at 3, but I hope you understand. And see you next time, and have a nice weekend.